The numbers are frankly staggering, and they're really driving the whole fiscal conversation right now.
Absolutely.
We are talking about the U.S. national debt, which as of early September 2025 is sitting at roughly $37.43 trillion.
It's almost an unimaginable figure.
It really is. And it kind of loses meaning until you break it down, right? It translates to a debt burden of about $110,020 for every single person in the country.
Or, if you think about households, it's something like $283,098 per household.
Oh.
It's immense.
And that debt isn't just, well, a number on a page.
No, not at all. The sheer cost of just servicing that debt, the interest payments,
Yeah.
that alone is really starting to constrain national priorities.
How so?
Well, it's eating up a huge and frankly rapidly growing slice of federal revenues. And that financial strain, that pressure, is exactly why policymakers are being pushed to look at options that maybe just a few years ago would have seemed completely unthinkable.
And that's really our mission today, isn't it? We're going to dive deep into this fascinating and, let's be honest, highly unconventional plan. It's multifaceted, designed to try and tackle this massive fiscal shortfall. And it leverages two really different, but maybe equally powerful asset classes: the nation's historical gold reserves
Right, the old standard.
and the government's more recently acquired and, let's face it, highly volatile cryptocurrency assets, specifically Bitcoin.
Yeah, a totally different beast.
The stakes here are just huge because the success or failure of this whole strategy seems to hinge entirely on whether they can manage the market volatility of these assets.
Okay, let's unpack this.
So maybe first, to really get why this kind of unconventional approach is even on the table, we should probably quickly touch on how the debt normally works.
Good idea. The basics.
Yeah. So the federal government, consistently spends more money than it collects in taxes and revenue. That creates deficits.
Year after year.
Exactly. And those deficits have to be financed through borrowing. Primarily, that means selling treasury securities, T-bills, notes, bonds.
And lots of different people and entities buy those, right?
It's
Like individual investors, big funds, even foreign governments. Correct. All of those. But crucially, the Federal Reserve itself is also a major buyer.
Ah, okay. And when the Fed steps in and buys up huge amounts of that new debt, how does that actually work? Are they just using existing money?
Well, often no. They're essentially creating new digital money to make those purchases. It's electronic ledger entries, basically.
So printing money, but the digital version.
Yeah, it's a simple way to put it, yeah. The technical term is often monetizing the deficit. Think of it like the government writes an IOU, and the central bank creates brand new money on the spot to buy that IOU.
Okay, I see. And I guess the benefit is it makes borrowing easier for the government.
In the short run, yes, absolutely. It can help keep interest rates lower than they might otherwise be, and it relieves pressure on the treasury and the markets. It provides liquidity.
But there has to be a catch, right?
There definitely is.
Yeah.
If you significantly increase the quantity of dollars floating around out there without a corresponding increase in actual economic output, more goods, more services, you risk devaluing the currency itself. Exactly. You're directly stoking inflationary risk. And given the debt levels we're talking about now, the strategies we're focusing on today are really these urgent attempts to find other ways, non-traditional ways, to get liquidity without just printing more money and triggering that exact inflationary feedback loop.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And it brings us right to the first and maybe the most historically rooted part of this strategy, the gold revaluation plan. This seems to be all about fixing an accounting issue, something about a massive, almost kind of crazy discrepancy in how the U.S. Treasury values the gold it holds.
It really is astounding when you look at it.
Yeah.
The Treasury holds a lot of gold, roughly 261 million ounces.
Okay.
But on their official books,
Right.
they value it using a price that was set way back in 1973.
1973, seriously, $42.22 per ounce. So if you do the math, the total official value of all that gold on their balance sheet is only about $11 billion.
$11 billion. But wait, what's the actual market price of gold today? It's much higher, isn't it?
Oh, vastly higher. Right now, it's hovering somewhere around $3,700 per ounce. Wow. Okay, so the real market value of those 261 million ounces is
Closer to $965 billion.
$965 billion versus $11 billion. That's nearly $1 trillion in value just sitting there, kind of hidden by old accounting.
Essentially, yes. Dormant asset value, trapped by an outdated rule. And that difference, that huge potential value, is what they're now looking to tap into.
So the plan isn't actually selling the gold, right? They want to keep the physical gold.
Correct. It's not about selling it off.
It's just about changing the number on the ledger. Is it really just an accounting trick, or is there more to it, like politically or financially?
It's kind of both, really.
Yeah.
The first step is purely accounting. Adjust the book value to reflect the current market price. That creates a huge paper gain, right? That nearly $1 trillion surplus.
Okay, a paper gain. How does that become actual usable money for the government?
That's the clever, or perhaps controversial, part. The Treasury would then issue special, non-negotiable certificates to the Federal Reserve. These certificates represent this new, much higher asset value of the gold.
So pieces of paper backed by the newly revalued gold.
Exactly. And once the Fed accepts these gold certificates onto its balance sheet, it effectively credits the Treasury's account with corresponding dollar amount, instant cash for the Treasury.
Ah, I see. So it's a way to get a massive injection of funds without having to go through the usual process of selling new Treasury bonds to the public or the Fed.
Precisely. It leverages the market value of a historical asset to generate funding that isn't technically new debt in the traditional sense.
That sounds pretty radical. Has anything like this ever been done before?
It has, actually. There is a historical precedent, which supporters of this plan often point to. During the Great Depression, President Franklin D. Roosevelt did something similar.
Really? FDR?
Yes. He revalued the official price of gold from around $20 an ounce up to $35 an ounce. It helped increase the money supply and provide resources during a severe crisis.
So the fact that they're dusting off a Great Depression-era playbook kind of tells you something about the level of fiscal stress they feel they're under right now.
It certainly reflects the seriousness of the situation, yes.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting, especially thinking about the risks. The Fed accepts these certificates, essentially putting nearly $1 trillion based on gold's current market price onto its balance sheet. What happens if gold then tanks? What if it drops back to, say, $2,000 an ounce after this whole revaluation?
That is the absolute crucial question and the central risk of this part of the plan.
Right.
If the market price of gold declines substantially after the revaluation, the value of the asset underpinning those certificates diminishes. This would potentially impair the Federal Reserve's balance sheet.
Impair? What does that mean practically? Can the Fed go bankrupt?
Well, no, the Fed can't really go bankrupt in the way a normal company can, because it can create money. But suffering a massive, very public loss on paper, potentially hundreds of billions of dollars if gold falls sharply, would be a huge blow.
To its credibility.
Exactly. It could seriously damage public confidence, and maybe more importantly, international confidence, in the soundness of U.S. fiscal management and the Fed's own stability. It's a big gamble on the future price of gold remaining high.
Okay, so that's the risk with leveraging gold, which is at least seen as traditionally somewhat stable, even if it fluctuates.
Relatively stable, yes, compared to what's next.
Right, because the next part of the strategy takes us into a completely different universe of risk, the Bitcoin reserve strategy. We're shifting from old money to new, digital, and notoriously volatile assets.
It's definitely a pioneering step, moving fully into the 21st century, you could say. An executive order has apparently established a formal strategic Bitcoin reserve.
And where did this Bitcoin come from? Did the government buy it?
No, it's primarily sourced from cryptocurrency seized in various law enforcement actions, you know, from illicit activities, cybercrime, things like that.
Ah, seized assets. Okay. Do we know how much they have?
The estimates vary quite a bit in the source materials we looked at. It seems to be somewhere between, say, 30,000 and possibly up to 200,000 Bitcoin.
That's a potentially huge range. And a lot of value, depending on the price.
A significant amount, yes. And crucially, the policy apparently changed. Instead of immediately selling off these seized bitcoins as they used to.
Which is what they typically did, right? Just auction them off.
Correct. Now, the plan is to hold them long term, treating them as a strategic reserve asset, much like the gold.
Okay, so they're holding Bitcoin as a reserve. How does that help with the debt problem? Is it the same idea as the gold plan?
It's analogous, yes. But using Bitcoin as the collateral instead of gold. The government intends to value this Bitcoin reserve based on current market prices.
Which are notoriously all over the place.
Extremely volatile, yes. But for illustration, let's use a figure mentioned in some documents, maybe around $100,000 per coin, just as an example valuation point.
Okay, $100,000 per Bitcoin. So they value their holdings.
And then they plan to pledge those digital assets, the Bitcoin, as collateral to the Federal Reserve.
Mm.
Again, just like with the gold certificates.
To get liquidity.
Yeah.
To get cash from the Fed based on the value of the seized Bitcoin.
Exactly. It allows the government to leverage these seized assets for fiscal support, again, without issuing new treasury debt in the conventional way.
But wow, the risk profile there feels completely different from gold.
Oh, absolutely. It's qualitatively different. Gold certainly has volatility. We discussed that risk. But Bitcoin's history is one of extreme, rapid price swings, far beyond what we typically see with gold.
So if the Bitcoin market crashes, which it has done spectacularly in the past,
the impact on the Fed's financial position, if it's holding collateral based on much higher valuations, could be dramatic. And the hit to investor confidence, both domestic and international, could arguably be even more severe than with a gold price drop.
Because it's a less understood, less trusted asset, maybe?
Partly that, and partly just the sheer scale and speed of potential losses. You're essentially pledging a highly speculative digital asset as collateral for the nation's finances. That means the Federal Reserve's balance sheet suddenly becomes vulnerable to the unpredictable swings of the global crypto market.
Which is a level of direct exposure they have never, ever had before.
Never. It introduces a kind of speculative instability right into the heart of the country's foundational monetary institution. It's a profound shift.
Okay, so we have these two quite different asset strategies running in parallel, revaluing old world gold, collateralizing new world Bitcoin. How do they tie these together? Is there something connecting them?
Yes, there's a crucial third piece that acts as the regulatory glue, if you will. It's legislation called the Genius Act.
The Genius Act. Okay, when did that happen?
It was reportedly enacted in July 2025. And it's critical because it establishes the necessary regulatory framework around a specific type of digital currency, asset-backed stablecoins.
Stablecoins. We hear a lot about those. What's the connection here?
Well, the Genius Act specifically sets up rules for stablecoins that are required to be pegged one-to-one to either gold or Bitcoin held in these U.S. strategic reserves we've been discussing.
Yeah, okay. So the gold and Bitcoin aren't just collateral for the Fed. They're also meant to back new forms of digital currency.
Precisely. The goal isn't just for the government to hold these assets or pledge them to the Fed. It's also to use them as the foundation, the backing, for new financial instruments that can circulate within the broader U.S. economy.
Why is that part so important? How does creating these stablecoins help solve the actual debt problem?
This is maybe the most complex but potentially impactful part of the whole strategy. These stablecoins, because they are asset-backed and regulated under the Genius Act, are essentially authorized to circulate as alternative forms of highly liquid currency.
Like digital dollars, but backed by gold or Bitcoin instead of just government promise.
Kind of, yes. But crucially, they are issued by private companies that meet the strict regulatory standards. Because these stablecoins are private sector liabilities, not government liabilities.
Okay, I see.
Their circulation effectively expands the money supply and could potentially boost economic activity and velocity without directly adding to the federal government's debt obligations on the Treasury's books.
Wow. Okay, so it's a way to inject liquidity and potentially stimulate the economy using private digital currencies backed by government-held assets without increasing the national debt figure itself.
That appears to be the core idea. It's a mechanism to achieve monetary expansion and provide liquidity through regulated, privately issued digital assets, bypassing traditional debt creation.
That is a huge shift, potentially, but it also sounds incredibly complex to manage.
Oh, immensely so.
If these gold-backed and Bitcoin-backed stablecoins become widely adopted, you're not just managing the risk of the Fed holding the assets, you're now managing the systemic risk of potentially trillions of dollars of this quasi-currency circulating issued by private firms, all resting on the value of those same potentially volatile strategic reserves.
The regulatory challenge is enormous. The Genius Act would demand constant, rigorous oversight. Regulators have to make sure those valuation pegs hold, that the stablecoins remain stable.
Meaning ensuring the issuers actually have the gold or Bitcoin backing every single token?
Exactly. Strict, verifiable collateralization standards are key. If a major private issuer were to fail, or if confidence in the backing wavers, the systemic risk could be immediate and widespread.
And just making these things work with the existing banking system must be a nightmare.
The integration challenges are historic. How do these digital currencies interface safely, legally, and efficiently with traditional bank accounts, payment systems, everything? The long-term success of this entire debt management strategy really hinges on the robustness and the day-to-day effectiveness of the regulatory enforcement under the Genius Act. It has to work flawlessly.
Okay, let's just step back for a second. All these really ambitious, maybe even risky strategies, the gold revaluation, Bitcoin collateral, the stablecoin framework, they aren't happening in a vacuum, are they?
Yeah.
What's the bigger economic picture?
No, definitely not in a vacuum. It really puts the urgency into sharp focus when you look at the macro environment. The key metric people watch is the U.S. debt to GDP ratio.
Right, how much we owe compared to the size of the entire economy.
Exactly. And that ratio shot past 119% in mid-2025. Most economists look at levels significantly over 100% with, let's say, elevated concern. It suggests a potential structural imbalance.
So the situation was already looking pretty serious.
Very serious. It's also worth mentioning another piece of recent legislation, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which was signed around the same time, July 2025.
Okay, what did that do?
That act introduced some significant tax and budgetary changes, things intended to try and stabilize government revenue and affect the long-term path of the debt.
So why are these more radical asset leveraging strategies still necessary if that bill passed?
Because those legislative changes, things like tax adjustments, take time to really filter through and impact the fiscal numbers. These asset strategies, the gold, the Bitcoin, they offer the potential for immediate non-traditional funding that the government seems to feel it needs right now, while waiting for those longer-term measures to hopefully take effect. They're buying time, essentially.
Okay, that makes sense. So if we try to pull all these different threads together, the revalued gold, the collateralized Bitcoin, the regulated stablecoins, what's the single biggest overriding risk that connects all of them?
Ultimately, I think the central risk comes back to the credibility in the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. That's the linchpin.
Oh, so.
If either the pledged gold, or perhaps more likely the collateralized Bitcoin, were to depreciate substantially in market value, and we've talked about how volatile Bitcoin is,
Right.
then the value of the collateral backing the Fed's assets diminishes. This isn't just some abstract accounting problem. It directly shakes the core confidence in U.S. fiscal stability, especially among international investors who hold trillions in U.S. debt.
So a crisis of confidence is the big fear.
It's a major fear. And layered on top of that is still the persistent inflationary concern we discussed earlier. Even though this isn't traditional debt, generating a sudden massive flood of liquidity through these complex asset-backed mechanisms could still potentially expand the monetary base too rapidly.
Meaning you could end up causing the very inflation you were trying to avoid by not just printing money directly.
It's a definite risk. If that liquidity surge happens faster than the real economy can absorb it through growth, you could intensify inflationary pressures. It requires incredibly careful management.
It really sounds like this whole strategy is, well, incredibly ambitious, definitely unorthodox, maybe even a bit desperate way to manage the debt.
It's certainly a paradigm shift.
It offers some undeniable potential upsides, like these new funding streams that don't look like traditional debt. But it also seems to introduce tremendous uncertainty, doesn't it? Mostly due to the asset volatility and the sheer complexity of the regulations needed. So what does this all mean? Where does this leave us?
Well, I think it means we are witnessing a fundamental change in how the U.S. government is approaching its own solvency. They seem to be reaching for every possible latent asset they can find, both the really old historical ones like gold and the very modern digital ones like Bitcoin, basically, to buy time and try to stabilize the fiscal ship.
So success isn't guaranteed.
Far from it. For this whole strategy to actually work, for it to ultimately safeguard trust in the U.S. financial system, the prudent management of that asset volatility we keep coming back to, and frankly, the diversification of the collateral involved, those aren't just secondary details.
You're absolutely critical.
They are paramount.
Yeah.
Everything depends on getting that risk management right.
Which brings us perfectly to our final thought for you, the listener, to maybe mull over. Policymakers here are trying to navigate some pretty extreme fiscal pressure by using two assets known for volatility. You have gold, historically more stable, but super sensitive right now because of this revaluation plan. And then you have Bitcoin, inherently prone to just massive price swings.
Two very different kinds of volatility risk.
Exactly. So the question for you is, given Bitcoin's wild history versus the historical significance and sensitivity tied to gold, which asset's future price swings do you think pose the greater long-term risk to the Federal Reserve's credibility and stability under this new debt strategy? Gold or Bitcoin?
It's a tough question with huge implications.
It really is. We'll definitely be watching closely to see how this all plays out.